Big Billy got picked on at school for things he couldn't change. He tried his best to play it cool, but in the seventh grade, you either fit right in or you don't fit. That's just the cold hard truth. I wish that I'd have been the friend that Billy never knew. I think it's time to come together, you and I can make a change. Maybe we can make a difference, make the world a better place. Look around and love somebody, we've been hateful long enough. Let the good Lord reunite us to this country that we love, undivided.
Yep.
Welcome back. Top of the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast is Friday, September 24th, 2021. Trying to keep it light, sort of. I don't know. There are some things that pertain to this. Been trying to speak to this for quite some time now. And, gosh, if there's any hope of staving off bad things, it would be great if we could do that. And there are examples in history where, you know, bad things are at least forestalled. I think of the book of Jonah, for example, and how Nineveh was a three-day journey. Jonah, a reticent messenger, finally shows up, and the Bible says that he set out a day's journey. It's at least 3 days, so at best, the way I read that, he made it a third of the way through town, and yet word gets, you know, spread throughout town, probably because of what I'm describing in from the Nazi seizure of power, chapter 2, The Anatomy of the Town. Because of that social cohesion, word gets to the king. I would say, I'm speculating, obviously, but, you know, for whatever reason, word gets all the way to the king, and then from the king on down, so to speak, the townspeople repent. And there is a stay of execution, so to speak. And lots of people study history and make note of patterns or cycles of history, they say. I've talked about, like, the book of Judges, for example. And, of course, you know, guys like Toynbee come to mind. We've had folks who have studied this stuff and documented it. Toynbee's A Study of History, Will and Ariel Durant series, William Strauss and Neil Howe, of course, The Fourth Turning, An American Prophecy, What the Cycles of History Tell Us About America's Next Rendezvous with Destiny. And so, you know, Strauss and Howe's Fourth Turning, in my humble estimation, is more of a predictive programming propaganda tool that is used, has been used ever since it was published as such. You know, every time we want to basically infect you with the mind virus that it's all inevitable, then we bring out something like Strauss and Howe's Fourth Turning and tell you what they wrote. And clearly they're the experts, quote unquote. So this is what's going to happen. But I don't agree with that. And so they talk about these cycles and so on. But an interesting excerpt for these purposes is this, you know, concerning this, you know, concept of the fourth American Revolution. And, you know, it depends on who we ask, obviously. We played the Gray State trailer the other day. And, you know, the way David Crowley put it, the second American Revolution will not be remembered, or probably not be remembered. And going to the orthodoxy of actual revolution, you know, the American Revolutionary period to now, basically, is kind of the idea there. But if you listen to certain folks, I mean, I've mentioned from time to time things like the Rees Committee and Thomas McNeice saying that the change that took place from 1933 to 36, in McNeice's report to the committee, he wrote that a change took place in America from 1933 to 36 that was so drastic as to constitute a revolution, and he wasn't being sensational. And, you know, he went on to basically say it happened with an overwhelming consent of the majority and without a shot being fired, essentially. How did that happen? Well, like he wrote, we discovered that education had been prepared in advance to endorse it. So education is important. Guys like Hitler know that. What are you? Your children are already in our camp, and so you'll die, and they are ours. Education, indoctrination, as you know, it's the sinister aspect of it. Education is important, and also the money system. You know, for the small towns, a lot of places, you know, across America, obviously, are building what is referred to as affordable income housing or low income housing. And it makes my eye twitch. We don't need things like that. We need to get rid of the central banking scheme, and then inflation goes away. Inflation is not a natural thing. It's not a naturally occurring thing. It's artificially introduced, and guys like John Maynard Keynes have written extensively about this and how it's essentially an invisible tax. It's the invisible tax, and in fact, Thomas Sowell, who is awesome, what did he say recently about that? Let's see if I can find that. Inflation is a quiet but effective way for the government to transfer resources from the people to itself without raising taxes. And for that matter, without raising awareness that that is exactly what's happening. Like Keynes wrote in The Economic Consequences of the Peace, there is no more subtle or sure way to overturn the existing basis of society. And it does, you know, inflation does that in a way that not one man in a million is able to deduce or detect. So, you know, there are these manufactured or artificial forces that are at work in creating these cycles of history. It's not just some kind of spontaneous, organic cycle that has no external or, shall we call it, man-made or manufactured influence. So with all of that in mind, the excerpt from Strauss and Howe's Fourth Turning, and you start to think about these periods, you know, American Revolution, Civil War, you know, the Great Depression, some people talk about, and World War II, they talk about, and then you have, you know, the subprime contagion. Again, that was not an accident or coincidence. It was very strategically orchestrated. Guys like Bruce Wiseman have documented that very effectively, I would say. So, Strauss and Howe's Fourth Turning was originally published in hardcover, I believe, in 1997, paperback 1998. And, you know, they talk about this stuff. This next phase was supposedly entered around 2005 to 2008, which, you know, obviously coincides with the subprime contagion, which again was orchestrated. If you were in the mortgage business like I was, you could see it. You could see it coming. I was talking about a collapse 2 years in advance with brokers who were telling me, no, Barry Habib's on CNBC. Look, he's saying there's no bubble. Well, you know what? Since Barry says there's no bubble, I guess there's... Oh, my goodness. What? Look what happened. Maybe Barry was paid to say that. Show me where a man gets his corn pone, and I'll tell you what his opinions is. Maybe he was handsomely compensated to encourage you to believe. And I'm not saying that he meant ill. I know a lot of people who did a lot of bad things, and really, ultimately, it's greed and vanity, so that is not a good thing. But, you know, there were some folks who would argue they were well-intentioned. Let's put all that lazy equity to work, shall we? Anyway, So from just continuing with this idea, you know, this stuff is not all, it's not all set in stone or etched in stone, and it's not all natural and organic and spontaneous. There's a lot of external influence, and my humble opinion is that Strassenhaus Fourth Turning is more a propaganda tool than anything else, more than a history lesson or anything else. So the excerpt with all of that said, the next Fourth Turning is due to begin shortly after the new millennium, again, originally published in 97, midway through the OO decade. Around the year 2005, a sudden spark will catalyze a crisis mood. Okay. Remnants of the old social order will disintegrate. Political and economic trust will implode. And as you listen to this and you see now, as we can reflect on history, think about the pressure that's been brought to bear by tyrannical forces, I would say, in simple terms, like big tech, for example, in suppression of freedom of speech and keeping track of the actual historical record and making sure that we, I mean, look what's happened just in the last 18 months, not let alone, you know, in the, you know, post 9/11 era, all the suppression of the legitimate facts. J. Michael Springman, you know, 19 Saudis, or excuse me, see, that's what happens. 19 terrorists, hijackers armed with box cutters, but weren't 15 of them Saudi? What about that? How come we attacked Afghanistan and Iraq? Why was that foreshadowed years in advance? How did William Cooper manage to predict it months in advance? Why was the Rand Corporation preparing the U.S. Army for Homeland Security published in the spring of 2001, April, I believe, months before September? What a coincidence. Homeland Security was, that term was, again, anathema is the only word that comes to mind. It was, you know, that was something that called to mind things like Nazi Germany. Homeland, what? We don't use that term in America. Now it's been normalized. So, you know, 19 hijackers armed with box cutters, 15 were Saudi, and J. Michael Springman told us that they got their visas. They all got their visas from the Jeddah Consulate, the CIA's Visas for Terrorists program. J. Michael Springman specifically said, I don't think this is a good idea. And he was essentially told, if you don't wave them through, you can look for another job. Look, buddy, if you want to work ever again, you'll keep your mouth shut. And on the list goes. Building 7 collapsed into its footprint after being hit by nothing. Frank DeMartini didn't make it, but he told us shortly before that they were engineered to resist or withstand multiple plane impacts, and he said it would be like sticking a pencil in a screen door. It would do nothing, in other words. Buildings have never, you know, that kind of thing has never happened before or since, buildings collapsing into their footprint, and on the list of actual facts go. But, you know, the suppression of that, think about the effort that's been brought to bear to what do you even call it? Not craft a narrative, but, you know, not form it, but very forcefully impose this narrative on the public, despite the actual facts that are numerous and should horrify us, you know. And so that's terrible, but, you know, now it's gone global, this propaganda and social engineering, and really we're seeing the realization of the big lie. I mean, I think we can see it now. We saw it with 9/11. We're seeing it with COVID. There is so much to question about all of this. And you can see that there is a big lie in the center of it somewhere that is so horrifying that if it's true, what does that mean? It can't happen here. This is America. There's just no way. We've been inculcated with this idea of American exceptionalism. No people are people throughout history and all time. And Lord Acton was right. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So again, with all of that in mind, the way that things have been manufactured over, say, the last 20 years in the post 9/11 era, think of these words. So the next fourth turning is due to begin shortly after the new millennium, midway through the 00 decade, around the year 2005. A sudden spark will catalyze a crisis mood. Remnants of the old social order will disintegrate, or they will be disintegrated, right? Political and economic trust will implode. Again, what happened, you know, the subprime contagion that was orchestrated was essential to this. Real hardship will beset the land with severe distress that could involve questions of class, race, nation, and empire. That's funny because that seems to coincide directly with, oh yeah, Samuel P. Huntington's Class of Civilizations and what the cultural Marxists have been doing, et cetera, et cetera. Michael Lind wrote about this stuff in his book from a slightly different perspective, I would say. Again, foreshadowing all of this, how did he know? Severe distress that could involve questions. The very survival of the nation will feel at stake. Sometime before the year 2025, America will pass through a great gate in history, commensurate with the American Revolution, Civil War, and twin emergencies of the Great Depression and World War II. And we have all of these sort of harbingers, you know. The PNAC document, Rebuilding America's Defenses, for example. All of the future trends reports from the NSC, it's just interesting that people write these things and magically they come to pass. Meanwhile, between when these guys magically write about things like rebuilding America's defenses, barring some catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor, which Patrick Claussen reminds us, among others, was a false flag strategy of tension event. You know, you have these orchestrated things that happen and then bring about this thing that bad guys write about, and they're scenario planning events in the interim. There's enough information out there. We should all be able to get knowledge up, and yet we see exactly what I'm describing in William Sheridan Allen's The Nazi Seizure of Power taking place in towns across America. It shouldn't be. And these social clubs being infected with these mind viruses in precisely the same way that Allen writes about, or Nesta Webster wrote about, or, you know, Christopher Browning wrote about, or Daniel Jonah Goldhagen wrote about, or Milton Mayer wrote about, Solzhenitsyn, on and on the list goes. We have all of these resources at our fingertips, and you don't even have to order them on Amazon. You can download lots of them. So instead of having people in hospitals wringing their hands and nurses whose spouse gets sick and is put on, you know, who is intubated and shouldn't be, or, you know, the social clubs being infected and infused with this nationalistic bent that William Sheridan Allen is describing in The Nazi Seizure of Power, we could be reading and sharing information humbly and saying, maybe Sinclair Lewis was right. Maybe if we're knowledged up properly, it can't and shouldn't happen here. Not to mention what the founders told us. Stick around, we'll be right back.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Welcome back. Eventually, I hope to get to a point, you know, what can we do about all of this? I mean, there is the spiritual aspect, plausible deniability. There's so much that's just, it's just becoming kind of overtly satanic. And, you know, I think of the Union Jack, you know, talking about this feigned persecution. Are we experiencing a sense of feigned persecution in America? I think we are. I think there's an aspect of feigned persecution. Are we really suffering, or is it more along the lines of what the Union Jack calls feigned persecution to bring us all along this sort of satanic continuum? So there's something interesting. At some point, I want to, I'm sort of bouncing around, but at some point I want to circle back around and eventually juxtapose, like I was kind of hinting at recently, D.L. Cuddy's NWO. Who calls it the new underworld order? It's not really new. It's the old Babylonian nonsense. It's progress, right? If you're looking, you know, through the looking glass down the rabbit hole, it's progress. So juxtaposing D.L. Cuddy's New World Order article from the same year, by the way, 1997. Sinatra, it was a very good year. With John Adams' series of letters to William Tudor concerning, in John Adams' words, the earliest and principal founder of one of the greatest political revolutions ever to have occurred among men. Reagan used to use that phrase, man's relation to man. And that's an interesting turn of phrase. This great American experiment is still the newest and most unique idea in all the long history of man's relation to man. That kind of thing. And he would use that man's relation to man turn of phrase. And we, again, it's one of the things I think that we've taken for granted. I remember distinctly around 2006 or so when those words really kind of struck a chord in me and it sort of dawned on me, wow, I think I understand. And before that, what the founders were saying really didn't make a whole lot of sense. Not really. Not deeply. It was not deeply resonant. And then it was like that, you know, Time for Choosing speech in particular, that sentiment that Reagan was expressing in the mid-60s particularly connected directly with the founding era and what guys like John Adams were saying. And so I want to connect the, you know, string of dots, the litany of dots. D.L. Cuddy says, you know, if you say this, you're cast as some conspiracy, this some tinfoil hat wearing person, and you're crazy and we should lock you up. But actually, here's a long history, an example of these people using these terms that are all sort of interrelated, where they want to control the world and everyone in it. And it's not crazy. And, you know, all these years later, and really in between as well, people just don't read these things. You know, we have books like Princeton University Press publishing Orr Rosenboim's The Emergence of Globalism, Visions of World Order in Britain and the United States, 1939 to 1950. Back in 2017, 20 years after this other stuff, and after Cuddy's article. And it validates it with a lot of the same names and similar quotes and excerpts and things. Turns out D.L. Cuddy and others aren't crazy after all. So I want to juxtapose that with John Adams' series of letters to William Tudor concerning the earliest and principal founder of one of the greatest political revolutions ever to have occurred among men, James Otis. And that is the sentiment, I think, what those guys were saying and what we should be focused on and how we should view the world and America and ourselves and one another and all those things. It's a great perspective, I think, that we have lost. And when you look at all of these cycles, so to speak, or revolutions, which is another interesting term, I think we lose that perspective. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here's a testimonial from Amazon.com. I am only 40, but I have put my body through hell working in manufacturing for 20 years. I recently started to notice a buzzing feeling along with a stuttering sensation with my heart. I had a full cardio stress done, which I passed. I decided to try Extendivite after getting the jingle stuck in my head. Halfway through the bottle, I really did notice a difference. After getting home from work, I would just sit in a chair for a few hours feeling like crap, and this stuff reduced that feeling along with heart discomfort to almost nothing. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the Republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the Republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. Fuck you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be a bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Bottom of the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast is Friday, September 24th, 2021. Not to get start to drift into the more macabre, you know, moribund sort of end of things. Not to do that. I really think John is right. It's Friday. Let's make it all is not lost day. But just a few sort of explainers real quick and then back to that kind of stuff. I do want to juxtapose, you know, the good news is all is not lost. We still have, you know, you can still go find John Adams' series of letters. He was the guy who said we should gather all this stuff up and hold on to it dearly. Kind of like the small town that I'm talking about. You know, really, if you spend time in those places and you just sort of ruminate on the stories, you know, if you spend time in those places, the stories that you hear and the things that you see, it takes a lot of strength of character and courage and fortitude to keep showing up in places like that. Because you can't, especially in today's, you know, social media, everything is public day and age. It's almost impossible to maintain any level of privacy. It was always difficult in places like that because of the Harper Valley PTA and so forth, but all the more so now. And what I find fascinating, and I, you know, this is just purely anecdotal, what I have observed in small places recently in the, like John was saying, the Idaho, Montana, Wyoming area, actually, really, is on Facebook, contrary to, and, you know, Facebook in particular, because it's more suited to these kinds of exchanges, places like Twitter and so forth, less so, at least in my estimation. Kind of the opposite of what Jaron Lanier foreshadowed on social media, and people actually using it as a platform to communicate, and it's very civil, it's very pleasant. Like John was saying, people are, you know, you see people saying on Facebook in particular, yes, we will pray for you, you know, praying for you, and lifting folks up in prayer. And that's a beautiful thing. That's evidence that all is not lost. So John Adams told us we should gather all of this information up and hold on to it. You know, seeing people in small towns that experience hardship or loss or failure or whatever, and then still have the strength of character to show up is a testament. And it's not a thing in small towns. It's not some badge of, you know, social justice, courage or something. It's not the usual victim psychopathy badge. It's just, hey, you know what? Got to keep showing up. And it goes mostly unnoticed, I would say. But it's a good thing. So I hope to get to that. John Adams, series of letters to William Tudor concerning James Otis, the earliest, according to John Adams, the earliest and principal founder of one of the greatest political revolutions ever to have occurred among men. That's what he said. And how lightly do we take that now in America? Well, you know, we're fantastic. Things are great here. We've cornered the market on truth, justice, and righteousness. We call it the American way, Chris. Come on. Look at those awful people over there. Look what they're doing. Yeah, you know, let's not go there unless we're going to dig into the details. The devil's in the details, literally and figuratively. And so if you want to go there, we can do that, but let's dig into the specifics. Look what they're doing. Well, how are they put up to it? In what variety of ways? In many cases, unbeknownst to them, were they put up to it? If 15 of 19 alleged hijackers armed with box cutters were infected with the same mind virus, why have we continued to support that and essentially condone it? Might there be a problem there somewhere? Maybe, just a little bit? The same thing that we've known for, say, 250 years or so is something that is somewhat of a mind virus. Why are we allowing that to flourish? Why are we allowing that to be taught at Yale, for Pete's sake? Why are we allowing Saudi billionaires to underwrite those kinds of things being taught at Yale University? Why would we do that? Sort of rhetorical and sort of not. So the esoteric nature of the term revolution, real quick, Alan Watt used to talk about this a little bit. You know, revolution is a cycle, but also there is the revolutionary or combative sort of nature to it, if you will, the war aspect So it's an interesting term, and you know, the esoteric nature of it is something that bad guys seem to have a lot of fun with. Speaking of bad guys, plausible deniability, like I said, compartmentalization is essential. Everything is becoming satanic. If you think about Charles Baudelaire's words, the French poet, my translation of Baudelaire is the most clever ruse of the devil is to persuade you that he does not exist. And then from there, you know, like I said, I mean, it starts from there. It actually starts before that with that idea from the Bible. You're either a slave to sin or a slave to Christ. We are encouraged to believe, especially in places like America, no, you can be your own man. He's a self-made man. Which echoes Baudelaire. The most clever ruse of the devil is to persuade you that he does not exist. And there's no influence there. He will persuade you he does not exist and then persuade you in all these variety of other ways, which goes right back to the garden, beginning of the book of Genesis. Same old stupid tricks. So, you know, you can influence people that way. And then, like the Lucius Trust and the work of the hierarchy and all of these other things, you know, it was the first received work, Alice Bailey's first received work, right? Credited to her as a received work. The prefatory statement, blah, blah, blah. Initiation human and solar. Most of these folks are just influenced and persuaded in ways that they really don't realize. And then there are some of the less profane initiates who work their way up this hierarchy and become absorbed in service of the plan. There is a plan. There is a central plan and a central planner. And it's always evil, even though it's cast in the most beautiful terms. Because who's gonna agree, yeah, you know what, let's subjugate everyone. We all want to be subjugated, and no, you have to paint a beautiful utopian picture. Nobody's gonna agree to the dystopic nightmare of mass genocide and complete and utter subjugation and you can own nothing and all of that fun stuff. Who's gonna agree to that? You gotta paint a beautiful picture. So like Paul said in 2 Corinthians 11, no wonder, you know, such men are false apostles, deceitful workers, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ. No wonder, for even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. Therefore, it is not surprising if his servants also disguise themselves as servants of righteousness, whose end will be according to their deeds. Not surprising. The wolf in sheep's clothing. So, you know, this persuasion that he doesn't exist leads to influence that people don't realize is influence. And then if you're a good minion in service to the plan, working your way up the hierarchy, pretty soon you realize, oh, yeah, there is a plan and you are more aware of it. But that's the whole initiation ritual kind of thing, indoctrination or whatever. Degrees, nonsense. But plausible deniability and compartmentalization is essential in all of this. And don't we see more and more of that, I think? And again, the kind of evil that guys like Milton Mayer write about in They Thought They Were Free, this continual menacing, this government by emergency, the next emergency. Oh my goodness, this thing, this COVID thing has been very effective for doing that. Now there's a variant. Now there's another variant. Now there's endless variants. It's the invisible enemy. It's crazy. Speaking of Norm MacDonald's recent passing and people, you know, doing tributes and things to him. He was the guy who said, in that one Larry King interview in particular, you know, I don't believe in DNA. Can't see it. Don't have any proof of it. So, you know, if I'm on the jury and they say, look, is DNA, I would say, what is DNA? I don't know what that is. And then he shocked Larry King. I don't believe in science. And he was, you know, it was a particular context, but it was quite humorous, I thought. So compartmentalization, bad guy's been trying to do that for a long time. Why would you do that to people? Because you can get people to do things they don't realize they're doing and working together like good little worker bees or ants. Only to discover at some point, whoops, maybe that's, you know, I thought I was doing something else. And at that point, they got you. Like John Brennan says, you know, you're suborned at that point. So what are you going to do? Who's going to believe you? You know, if you try to activate your dead man switch or whatever, we'll just tell the public that you knew all along and this was a lie. You were trying to say something that wasn't true and we'll just lie about you and discredit you and or murder your whole family and make it look like a murder-suicide. I digress. That's a wild tangent and perhaps not one for the it's not all lost. It's all not, you know, all is not lost day. Probably not for that day. So another time. So the fourth turning to me, you know, I wonder, you read, for example, what the cycles, the fourth turning, what the cycles of history tell us about America's next rendezvous with destiny. Is that, do I hear echoes of Manly Palmer Hall's Secret Destiny of America in there, albeit in perhaps less esoteric, more clinical, historical, kind of press-ready packaging? It seems like it. You know, it's that whole, again, it's the stabbing scene in Saving Private Ryan. You know, it's all inevitable. Resistance is futile. You will be assimilated kind of nonsense. All right, enough about all that. The Nazi Seizure of Power, The Anatomy of the Town, Chapter 2. This is a good thing, minus the infusion of nationalism. Again, Nesta Webster talked about this. This was happening 150, 200 almost years ago. And that's what she wrote about in books like World Revolution, The Plot Against Civilization, which is still the same old plot, still happening. So while these were strictly apolitical, this is page 19, The Nazi Seizure of Power, William Sheridan Allen. Experience of a single German town, 1922 to 45. The town is Northeim, and this is chapter 2, The Anatomy of a Town, page 19. While these were strictly apolitical, these groups, shooting clubs in particular, many of the most innocent clubs became infused with nationalism. Thus, the Gardeners Club gave a garden product show in 1930, at which the speaker attacked foreign competition. Have we heard about this, you know, regarding China lately? It must be hammered into every German. Eat German fruit. Eat German vegetables. Buy German flowers. Whatever social cohesion was not provided by the various formal clubs of Northeim came from two informal types of social gatherings. One was the Stammtisch, the Stammtisch. The other could be called the beer club. The Stammtisch was a group of men who ate lunch together on a specified day of every week, which gets back to what I was saying about the little old farmers, for example, that get together in their overalls and chew the fat over coffee in the mornings. Usually not during, you know, the harvest season, but you can find them gathered during other times. So The Stammtisch was a group of men who ate lunch together on a specified day every week at the same restaurant around the same table, hence the name. They were closed and definite groups, some lasting the lifetime of the members, all marked by close friendship and free discussion. The beer clubs were similar. They consisted of regular meetings at some tavern for talk, beer, and possibly card playing. Given the town's political division, one result of these beer clubs, quote-unquote, was that taverns tended to become politically segregated. A socialist was not welcome in a Nazi tavern, which is ironic, or vice versa. And again, this all reminds me of what we're seeing now in the, you know, the division of kind of a Trump-Biden America, if you will, if I could cast it in those kinds of terms. It's, you know, it's the same kind of disingenuous divisiveness. The similarities are frightening and way too glaring. If people would just kind of stop and maybe observe. We'll be right back.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Thank you. camera converts the picture into a television signal.
Welcome back. If we could get sufficiently knowledged up, it would certainly help. But, you know, again, there is a clever and cunning foe, exceedingly cunning. And so it all falls back on that, you know, you're either a slave to sin or a slave to Christ. And only the Holy Spirit is able to outfox the fox, basically. I'll just leave it at that. So a brief finishing this excerpt and then back to the phones. Together, these groups were the most common and closest social organizations in town. Mutual trust was a prerequisite for their flourishing. Many clubs and societies cemented individual citizens together. Without them, Northheim would have been an amorphous society, yet few of them cut across class lines. So it's a cohesive society, but there are, you know, cliques, basically, obviously, like there are everywhere. This gets exploited in these moments. It's part of guerrilla warfare. It's part of unconventional stuff, you know, OOTW. Indeed, when one surveys Northheim's economic, cultural, and governmental structure, the impression is that of a balanced, self-contained entity. The one way in which the town was not integrated harmoniously was socially, where there were distinct class divisions in almost every sphere of activity. This disunifying factor grew to be politically important, and under the impact of steadily declining economic conditions, politics became radicalized. Does any of this ring a bell? In the years after 1930, this flaw split Northheim wide open, led to bloody riots and the deterioration of the democratic mood, and culminated in the Nazi seizure of power. The Nazi answer to the problem of class division was to abolish its expression by force. And that's what the victim psychopathy of cultural Marxism doesn't realize. You're playing right into that strategy. So, with that in mind, value the local town, value the local townspeople, maybe have a newfound fondness and appreciation for it. And, you know, let us love one another, shall we? Pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you and all that kind of stuff. To the phones in the remaining moments here. Pat in Texas, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Hi, Chris. I'm sorry I didn't call sooner. But I just wonder, do you talk most of the time about John Adams because he wanted to expose the Freemasons?
Not really. I talk most about John Adams because of what I mentioned, which is, you know, his distillation of what.
Well, anybody can say anything.
What's that?
Anybody can say anything. That's how the world is fooled now. But what you have to do
what I was just saying.
The world outlook.
You sound world muffled. Outlook. I can't understand what you're saying. What did you say?
Oh. you have to look at the world outlook, and that he wanted to expose them, and George Washington was one, and so, you know, people hold that against us, but we haven't had a conservative newspaper as long as I remember. I mean, they used the Washington Times.
Yeah, the reason that I point to... Yeah, you keep sounding muffled, Pat. The reason why I pointed to John Adams is what I mentioned, because he is the quintessential distillation of, you know, what the Great American Experiment was supposed to represent. We're out of time. Pat, thanks for your call. Folks, I hope you have a great weekend. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
If a lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping including the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.